Ministries.com podcast and Annual Web Council. I'm your host, Rillian, and welcome back. Today, it's going to be complete spoilers. If you have not seen the movie, unless you want everything ruined, well, not ruined, but given away, then stop listening now, because we're going to go ahead and start doing an analysis scene by scene of everything in the Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. So, let's get started. We are here once again, and we have Glumpuddle. Glumpuddle, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Good to see a familiar face, or hear a familiar voice, I suppose.
Yes.
Thank goodness I can't see your face today.
Yeah, I'm kind of used to being able to see you now. So back to the old days, I guess. Which is what Prince Caspian's about. So it's good. Return to the old days.
Mm-hmm. And we also have Skillet Dude. Skillet Dude, welcome back.
Hi. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. I saved a baby rabbit from one of our cats.
Good.
Yeah, I heard this.
Wow, another day in the life.
Yeah, I heard the squealing sound. I'm just out at night and I hear the squealing sound. We have 8 cats and live out in the country. And I see this cat carrying over a baby rabbit. And I thought, oh. So I went over and looked. The cat would just set it down. And that rabbit would hop a little bit and it would pounce on it again. Then it'd let it go and it would hop a little bit and it would pounce it on it again. Just torturing it. So I picked it up and it was terrified. It didn't even try to jump away. It was just shivering in my hand, so I took it way out in the field and let it go.
Good times.
That was my good deed for the
year. You're an animal rescuer.
Yes, I like to think so. But anyway, there are more important things. And Glumpuddle, you've seen the movie 3 times. Maybe going to see it a 4th time, you said?
Possibly tonight, yes.
Okay, I'm probably going to see it a 3rd time this week. Skillet Dude, how about you?
I've seen it once, but I'm going to see it again probably this week.
Well, we know which one of the 3 here.
Oh, I know. It's so
fan.
Shocking, isn't it?
Okay. Hey, well.
Oh, yes. Well, some people are busy.
Well, actually, I did just finish reading the book again last week. So.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read. Since seeing the movie, I have not read the book, so you definitely got that one on me.
Okay. Actually, it gave me a whole new perspective, because after reading the book again. And
I'd like to reread the book soon. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what we're going to do. We're going to basically do an analysis. We kind of, I guess what we had last time, Glumpuddle, was sort of a review of the film. I guess we'll basically do an analysis of the film. And Glumpuddle, we don't really know where you're coming from. So I think I read your review on NarniWeb. But I guess you can just go along with us in the analysis and we'll all just... It'll be basically like a super long commentary.
Right.
We're going to go scene by scene. And if one of us forgets to...
Good stuff.
Yeah, if one of us forgets to mention a certain part that came up, then we can go ahead. So, we're just going to get as far as we can in a decent length of time. And then next week, hopefully, some of our Aussie friends will have been able to watch the movie. And maybe we can get some of them on here.
Yeah.
So... anyway, let's begin.
Be cool.
It basically starts off with the Disney logo, as Glumpuddle was pointing out earlier. And
yes, very fancy logo.
But actually, not my favorite part. I'm sorry, but I just loved the beginning
transition.
with the moons.
The Walden Media logo, the transition to that, yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's something that just jumps out to fans that. I'm sure they thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool to start it off like this?
Huh?
Yeah, that was very cool to see.
But basically, we have the whole Prince Caspian fleeing scene at the beginning. I mean, what did you guys think of that? How do you think it worked as an entrance to the movie and all? Skillet, why don't you
Who wants to start off?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got lost there. I lost you guys for a second.
Okay. Well, yeah, it was more fast-paced and, you know, and action-packed. Like, at first when I saw it, it was kind of sad just to see all of the sort of Dr. Cornelius relationship cut. That was a little bit sad, but I thought that it was kind of like an, you know, exciting way to open it up, and it worked well for what that was and what they were trying to accomplish by opening it up strongly like that. So I liked it pretty much, but it was sad to see some things cut out of the book that I was like, oh, no, it would have been cool to see that kind of thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree that it's almost heartbreaking. It's not, that wasn't unexpected, but it was really hard to see that all the stuff with Cornelius and Cass being on the tower and them having conversations about the old days, which
Yeah.
actually makes later in the story when he finds them all the more powerful. I understand the reasons why it was coming. There just isn't a great place to put it. Now, the scenes that were shot exclusively for the video game, I think are excellent scenes, and maybe an extended DVD or something, like they can put them back in, but there's just not a great place to put them. And I once again love the transition from the Walden Media logo and zooming into the window, and I like the Mirai's gazing out of the window and everything. The heavens have blessed us. It was kind of a nice, you're not really sure what's going on kind of beginning. So I thought it had a much stronger beginning than Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah, I think the
Yeah, I
again,
agree.
I agree with you guys about Cornelius, of course, but I'm just thinking about, I think it is a really good way of getting people in to the movie, just because you immediately can sympathize with this character from the start. Just because, oh my goodness, he's this guy who's got all these soldiers after him, and it sort of gives you an oh, okay, we can sympathize with this character. The one problem I think that this setup with you alluded to a bit, Glumpuddle, was not only does it take away from some of the power from him discovering the old Narnians, but it also makes it a little more vague as to what the Telmarines believe as far as old Narnia, and is it, because we talked about a little bit of this on the forums. Is it extinct? Is it just a myth? And I think, and all we have really from Dr. Cornelius is there was so much more I wanted to tell you. That kind of sets it up, but you're not really sure what Caspian believes.
When I came to that part, I assumed he was talking about Miraz killing his father and all those things. Because that's later, he tells him that. And so that's kind of what I thought he was talking about. Although it could also have something to do with the old Narnians as well.
That I hadn't thought, yeah.
Although we know from
Yeah.
the video game deleted scenes, it is Dr. Cornelius telling about the old Narnians, and Caspian says, "Oh, they might still be alive or whatever." Of course, that's just a deleted scene shot for the video game. So, whether or not that means anything for what ended up in the film, I don't know.
Well, how did you guys
Yeah.
think of the whole, basically the way they shot it. As far as not just how it works in the story, but just as a scene by itself and the progression with the him going into the woods and so on.
I like setting up the whole, from the very beginning, setting up the fact that the Telmarines are afraid of the trees, and we're not sure why. In the book, I think they're
Yes.
afraid of the trees because, Cornelius explains they're afraid of the ocean because of Aslan. Then they let the trees go, the trees grow up to cut themselves off from the ocean, and then they become afraid of the trees. In the movie, they kind of made it seem like they're afraid of the trees because they've heard rumors that the old Narnia still exists in the trees. And I liked how, Caspian shoots it out of the bridge, and then it's just, open, country for a long time. And then it goes into the trees, and it's like, oh, it's like entering another world. And that's what the two opening credit scenes of the first two films have in common, is it's both of them, it's like, traveling somewhere, almost going to another world, another place. And so I thought that was a cool way to set up the creepiness of, the old days and myth, all these stories and becoming real and everything.
I also thought it was very, very good how they brought up
Yeah.
Glazel, and they also sort of set up his character, because I didn't like in the book at least that all of a sudden they just show up. I liked in this they sort of were introduced Glazel and Sepespian, and they were integrated into it. So that was really, really helpful for the film, I'm sure. So I liked that part of it as well.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. And one thing I thought, and I'm sure this was intentional, But when the movie first starts off, you have, the soldiers in the castle. You have, I mean, so much of it does not at all seem like Narnia, at least not the Narnia from the first movie. Especially, when you see the soldiers walk into the room and, aim their crossbows at the bed.
And that's a really cool shot, by the way, of Glazell when it's showing all the feathers and stuff around him, and they're waiting
Yeah.
for it to clear. It's a really
Yeah,
cool shot.
I just thought, whoa, this is definitely not supposed to be the same Narnia. It's supposed to, they're definitely showing that this is a completely different place from the
Remember.
Happy
More
Caravelle.
savage.
Yes, a more
Exactly.
savage place than we
Yeah,
remember.
I would be curious about, like, what would someone think who had just seen the first film? They hadn't read the books. They just seen the first film once, and they said, "Oh, another Narnia." And they went to see it. Like, what are they thinking when this opening scene comes up and it's completely not at all what you would expect? You'd expect to see the four children, and you're in, what you assume is Narnia, but it's a completely different Narnia. I mean, like, what do you? I'd be curious to see, like, what are you thinking watching this opening scene?
I don't know. I don't associate with those people,
Exactly.
I would say, like, who are all these people that I'm seeing? Like, who are these? I mean, like, because in the story, there's like hardly any characters that are still there because they're all dead, of course. But yeah, I would just be thinking, who are all these random people and this lady who's like pushing out a baby? I mean, it was kind of
Yeah.
strange, like
Oh yeah,
so.
that was. I'm sure that shocked a lot of people to have start off with a childbirth.
Right.
Definitely, definitely.
Now, Glumpuddle brought this up in the forums about when Caspian crosses the river. It reminded you of, it made you think of a foreshadowing to the river god, I think you said.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, Telmarine, Caspian is on his horse and he crosses the river, and it's with some difficulty, but he does make it across. Then the Telmarines go across, and one of them gets washed away, and then there's a kind of a then the choir comes in and then the music for a little bit. So the first time I saw it, I wondered if that was supposed to be a little bit of foreshadowing for the River God, which is, they did, apart from that, perhaps, they didn't set up the River God at all. But maybe that's just supposed to be something you're supposed to catch on your second viewing.
Maybe.
But that definitely occurred to me when I saw it.
I definitely didn't think, oh, a foreshadowing to the river god, but it was definitely a subconscious, oh, isn't it interesting that Caspian's getting across fairly easily and the Telmarines are having a very difficult time?
Yeah, almost like the river has some kind of instinctive knowledge that Caspian's going to help them or something like that.
Yeah.
I guess
Very cool opening credits.
definitely. I think it's. I mean, a lot of course, a lot of films these days don't even do opening credits, especially action films. The Lord of the Rings didn't do them. Star Wars didn't do them. I think I read Star Wars was the first film to ever not have opening credits at the beginning. But if you're going to do opening credits for an action movie, this is the way to do it for sure.
Yeah,
Yes.
when I'd heard about the opening credits during the chase, I couldn't picture how it would work having an action sequence, and it just seems like the two would cancel each other out. It would almost seem cheesy having opening credits during a chase scene, but it actually works well the way they shoot it. I was really yeah, I thought it was surprisingly it worked really well, and of course I clapped for the based on the book by C.S. Lewis one.
I've noticed for both films when, and of course, Harry Gregson-Williams is scoring the whole thing. I don't know if he scores it after. I think he scores it after they put the credits in, because I noticed in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and in Prince Caspian, there's a little flare up in the music when his name comes up. And I don't.
Yeah, I've noticed that before with other films.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Are you saying like the music gets like something happens to the music whenever his credit shows up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed that with other movies before. That I always thought I was imagining it, but I'm glad to hear you say that because I guess it really does happen. I don't know.
Well, now of course the scene where he meets the Nicabrick and Trumpkin. I mean, that's just I just thought that was. I guess they did it as well as they could. It just seemed a little rushed. I guess my. The biggest question on my mind at the time was, what does Trumpkin know? Because they've just obviously throughout the film they reinforced the idea that, well, every one of these not old Narnians knows all about the gifts of the four kings and queens of old. And they obviously know about the horn and this Peter's sword. So, I mean, what do you think that Trumpkin was? What do you think Trumpkin knows when he sees the horn and then he immediately dashes off to sacrifice his life for Caspian? Did that strike you as odd at all?
What do you think, Skillet?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like what to say. So like you're saying, since he saw him blow the horn, is that what you're saying? Or I don't really understand.
Well, he goes forward. He says they've seen us, and he runs forward at Caspian with a sword, and then he sees the horn.
Yeah.
And then is this supposed to be? Oh, he knows that whoever has the horn is supposed to be the rightful king of Narnia. It just seemed a little. I'm just wondering, because it kind of makes sense to me. But
it was very fast. I mean, I can understand. Now, I think the idea, like, if you think about the rest of the film, you know, later there's a scene where Cornelius is talking to Miraz in his study, and he talks about how the Narnians believe the horn could summon the kings, you know. And so the idea that's in the movie is that the horn has become a legend among the Narnians because it was lost, and no one knew where it was. Mm-hmm. And they believed it could, you know, call the kings back and maybe, you know, free them from the Telmarine rule or whatever. So presumably Trumpkin sees the horn, and I guess I'm not sure how he knew what it looks like, might have been part of the legend, and immediately thinks, oh, this guy's got the horn. That must, you know, it must mean something good for Narnia. Then the part I didn't buy is that he's immediately willing to run off and risk his life in order to protect it in a matter of two seconds.
Right, because that's
I'm
sorry, and that's totally different from the book, because like, you know, his character was like, he sort of totally just after a while he said that okay, I'll go, I guess, since you know no one else will, and I guess like it's all just you know myth anyway, but I'll go to you know accept your you know your orders. So I figure. Yeah, that doesn't really go against his sort of like hesitant character in the book. That's what I would think.
I agree. He's the big skeptic in the book, and I mean, it's one thing if he had you know, like after I mean, just seeing him make that switch in 3 seconds was not, or maybe it wasn't a switch. They maybe just changed it so that he wasn't such a skeptic. Although I'm not really sure about Trumpkin. I mean, he does say later in the movie. You know, I'm not about to jump off a cliff for someone who doesn't exist. And then, but he also says, you know, I thought that, you know, I thought Aslan abandoned us after you lot did. Maybe he was just being sarcastic there. So exactly how much Trumpkin believes is a little bit unclear to me, although he certainly does not appear as skeptical as he is in the book.
Right.
I think, here's a question. Because and we won't talk about this right now, Glumfuddle. We'll talk about this maybe later if you're with us when we discuss when the Pevensies meet Trumpkin. But does Trumpkin know who Caspian is? Do you think?
You mean when he first sees
when he
him
sees
outside
at the very
hole,
beginning? Does he knows who? Does he know who Caspian is?
I don't think there's any reason to believe that. No, I mean because Nicabrick and Trufflehunter obviously didn't, because he had to say, you know, I'm not a soldier. I'm Prince Caspian. So I'm Prince Caspian. So I don't think there's any reason to believe that he knew it was Caspian.
Yeah, I don't really know yet of any way that he would know. I mean, he's just a random guy who fell off his horse, and you know, I'm not really sure how. But
presumably finds it out later when he's being interrogated by Miraz, and Miraz says, "You know, I would find Prince Caspian and all that." So
yeah,
yes.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we have the transition where
very good transition.
I thought it was pretty. It worked pretty well. I was wondering how they were going to do it, and of course, then it goes to the Carl Horn in London. But you have
really
the whole reintroduction. I'm sorry, what?
That was really creative. Just saying the horn transition.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have a whole reintroduction of the Pevensies, and every character has a little reintroduction here. And how do you guys think they dealt with this whole scene, but basically up to where they get sucked back into Narnia or drawn back into, called back into Narnia?
Well, I was actually shocked about how they chose to introduce Peter, because I wasn't expecting like a full-on fight against someone else in the station. It just seemed like it was sort of drastic for his character, but I guess in the way that they wanted to, you know, they wanted to portray him in the film, it works. But as far as the book character, I was like, wow, that's kind of strong. But yeah, I liked the Susan one. I liked how, you know, that kid was like trying to find out his name. I mean her name, and like she lied and stuff. I liked that part. But yeah, definitely the Peter sequence was kind of shocking at first.
I
I
think.
agree. I
Oh,
agree
sorry.
totally.
You know, I think. Well, for me, I guess I was expecting the Peter fight to be more of a one-on-one. I think it actually. I was a little happier to see that it was two against one, and Peter was clearly the one at the disadvantage there, just
Yeah,
because it
he
did.
didn't, he hasn't really thrown any punches or anything. He's just him getting pushed around the whole time. That was a small comfort.
Yeah, because it does. It wouldn't really. You wouldn't really sympathize with a character who you see immediately with a fist fight, in a one-on-one fist fight with a kid. But when you see it's clearly, you know, these two other kids picking on Peter, and maybe Peter's a bit at fault, and you find out later, well, you know, yeah, he should have definitely handled it differently, but he wasn't the one who, you know, he wasn't the one who started being a jerk in the first place.
Yeah,
I
picking
know
a fight with
that
people.
sounds horrible, but I did think it was interesting that, and we can get into the whole, I don't think we want to get into the whole Susan from the Last Battle debate here, but I did think it was interesting that just they show Susan reading a magazine, you know, just up on the latest fashion and what, you know, hubbub about what's going on with people. And
Yes.
I forget the magazine. Was
Maybe.
it Life magazine?
I don't know. Yeah.
I'll have to find. I'll look for that tonight.
All right, find out for us tonight. I did
But
like
I
it.
didn't really get the whole introduction with Susan, honestly. I didn't really understand what they were trying to do exactly. Like, what was the point of her like trying to like being a little annoyed with that kid? And I don't know. I don't really understand what they were trying to do with that.
Maybe it was like they were trying to like hammer in that, you know, she's, you know, grown, and that boys are, you know, starting to get like, you know, attracted and stuff, and so she's kind of shocked at first, so she lies about her age. And I think of like, you know, how they were trying to do like the whole coming out age, you know, like where you're like, okay, well, I'm now like a woman, so I can, you know. So I think that was what they were trying to actually get across.
I think I do agree with you, Skillet, dude. I think that's probably what they were trying to do, although I don't think it was really necessary. Thanks. I think I may this just did pop into my mind later. I was thinking, well, maybe they're doing that to say, well, you know, she's making a comparison. Well, she can have this guy who's going to boarding school, or she can have Caspian, you know.
Right.
There's like, well, it's not much, you know, one can easily see who she would fall for.
Yeah.
Shallow
Yeah,
times
I don't
we
know.
live in.
Yes,
It was a
indeed.
relief to see the Pevensies after, you know, a good, what do you think it was? Just 6, 7 minutes of being in Narnia. And then it was a relief to see the Pevensies again. Every time I've seen it, it's like, oh, I always find I'm really glad to see them.
I did like Edmund's reintroduction. I thought,
Yeah, he
you know.
just selflessly comes to Peter's rescue immediately.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I think of all the characters, the one who really remains intact the most from the book, of the main characters, except for maybe Lucy, I don't know. I think, I mean, definitely Lucy and Edmund, maybe Edmund more than anyone.
Well, the only reason I would say Edmund is because he has doesn't really do much in this movie. They didn't really do anything with him. But Lucy, I would venture to say Lucy is probably the star if I had to pick one of this movie. And I think Lucy was totally true to who she is in the book. And so I would say Lucy without a doubt. Edmund is just that they didn't really do much with Edmund in this one.
Well, they didn't do a whole lot with him in the Lucy didn't do a whole lot with him in the book either. Really, he comes up in Don Treader as almost assuming the role
Yeah.
of Peter,
Yeah,
in a
it's
sense. But anyway, you know, Glumpuddle, when the first trailer teaser trailer came out, we talked about the shot of them getting pulled into Narnia with the bricks getting ripped away. And what did you guys think of that whole transition there?
Well, first off, let me just quickly say that it turns out that was not just for the trailer, where it's like, you know, it's showing through the train and it's like
Oh yeah,
flashing.
that's true.
Yeah.
We thought it was going to be a
Turns
trailer
out that was
shot.
actually in the movie. Yeah, and actually, at first I didn't when I saw it in the trailer, and then you said it was a trailer, so I go, "Oh, you're probably right." So thank you for leading me astray, really, and appreciate that.
Anytime.
Wow.
Okay, so
Yeah,
what do you think of them getting pulled in Narnia Skillet?
I liked how like they used the like the window panes of the train. I thought that was kind of a cool idea to actually do. Yeah, I thought it was kind of creative how they actually tried to, because yeah, in the book it wasn't, they didn't, it didn't explain quite very much how it actually happened, and
Nothing, yeah.
I actually prefer seeing something like that rather than them, swooping out into the air, vanishing. I like how they sort of, because yeah, images of the BBC are in my mind, so I'm
Anything
glad
looks
that,
good.
We want them to freeze and then spin around in circles.
Yes. So yeah, I'm glad they actually went this route instead of the other route. So there you go.
Yeah, obviously, we knew they had to do something. In the book, it just says, "And the station vanished," and that's all it gives you. And obviously, they had to do something. When I saw this in the teaser trailer, we saw a little bit of it. I felt like it was too much, but seeing it in context with the music and everything, and hearing them say some of the lines, oh, it feels like magic. I actually really liked it. I like how the bricks pull away, and I actually noticed it the second time. You can see parts of the mountain behind the bricks. It's almost like
Oh, really?
instead of it's instead of them getting whisked away, it's almost like the world around them is getting whisked away,
Yeah, that's what I said. I think.
and then they stay there. And then I love at the end how it's like for just a second you see the train, like when they're in Narnia, you see the train just go past and disappears into Narnia. Although I half expected to see it wrecked on the beach when it showed them, which would have been a cool visual. But yeah, I think it was one of my. I think it captures the spirit of the book, where it's just that feeling of suddenly getting the shock of just suddenly getting jerked into another world, which is one of the ideas that started the story in C.S. Lewis's mind. So I thought they were. This is a very successful scene. It evoked the spirit of the book.
Yeah, I was really happy to see, just I think I said in the older episode, where the world around them is getting pulled away, and I really like that. And I was actually kind of happy and surprised to have them, the Lucy's line, "Ow, someone pinched me,"
Yeah.
because that I thought, I really didn't think they would keep that in at all.
Yeah, then they have Edmund says something like Peter says, like, "Let go of me," and Edmund says, "I'm not touching you," you know. And actually that Lucy's part came across as a little bit cheesy, but I like when Peter says, "Hold my hand," and Edmund goes, "I'm not holding your
I
hand."
thought that was great.
Actually, I didn't catch that till the second time.
Oh, really? Yeah, he says, "I'm not holding your hand."
Oh,
Yeah, that
boy.
was a very successful transition.
And then we have them coming up to the ruins. So.
And they've got the same music from the opening credits of the first movie when they're playing at the beach.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Pretty sure, yeah, that do 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 do
Yeah,
do do do.
the recycling begins in that scene. So there you go.
Hey, we could talk about the
Well, I think that
recycling
one.
later.
Yeah, right. Specific scenes here, but let me just say that I do think that was one of the few parts where they actually lifted a track from Wardrobe and put it here. All the other ones have just been the same themes kind of re-recorded. But yeah, this was, I think they just lifted it from Wardrobe. But anyway, more on that later.
More on that later.
Yeah, I remember in the TV spots hearing Edmund say, "What do you suppose we are?" And just kind of thinking exactly what Peter said. "Well, where do you think?" Just kind of thinking he was being kind of dumb. And seeing it in context, like he looks up and he sees the ruins. It's like, well, wait a second. Maybe we aren't in Narnia. So I thought that worked really well. And I really, yeah, I like them. It still seems a bit cheesy to me how they're just jumping into the water and getting wet and they don't care. And that seemed like a little bit, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, but it just seemed like they wouldn't do that. They can
I
get their
disagree.
clothes
I'd
wet.
do that. Found out I was in Narnia again, I'd go, "Yeah, I'd do that."
I guess it's because I live about 10 minutes away from the beach, so maybe I wouldn't do
That's
that.
probably it. You're just spoiled,
Yeah,
Exactly.
taking things for granted. Well, yeah, I
Yeah.
would just be happy that I would be out of, school, because they were going off to like studies and stuff. So I'd be like,
Oh,
"Yes,
yeah."
yeah,
Well, of course,
no
I
more
think
homework.
Glumpuddle would probably also, if he got into snow-covered Narnia, he'd probably jump in the snow like Peter was
Oh
doing.
yeah,
Going
from
like, see,
Wardrobe, I'd be rolling around in
I wouldn't do that because
the
I get snow here in Kansas, and I visit
snow.
relatives in Colorado, so there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd be like mouthfuls of snow.
Snow cones.
Anyway.
Continuing on, the whole I actually thought this was probably, I mean, it was really fast as far as them discovering that they did, that they were in Caer Paravel.
Yeah, that was
But
inevitable.
I thought, you know, it's, I thought it actually worked pretty well. And I liked that, you know, of course, they had the gold chess piece, and I love Edmund's line, "Well, I didn't exactly have a gold chess set in Finchley, now did I?"
Yeah. And
Yeah.
that is one of my favorite parts of the book. Just this, you know, one of the things I love about the book is the strangeness of coming back to a world that is vaguely familiar, but obviously it's totally different. They can almost remember, but not quite. And I thought in the short time they had, I thought they really captured that creepiness of they kind of recognize it, but they're not really sure at the same time. And then when they find the treasure chamber, I thought that was such a great eerie moment, just as eerie as it is in the book, to think of this place that's been untouched forever. Well, not forever, but for about 1,300 years.
You were going to say something, Skillet. I know you were.
Okay, well, I liked how they actually changed, or well, not changed, but actually showed how they had to break down the door and stuff, and how, you know, it was all kind of like old and decrepit, and yeah, I just liked all the fine details about the cobwebs everywhere, like, you know, on the actual doorknob area and stuff. I just thought all of the really small things that you notice when you come across something really old, I thought that was really, really effective in the way that they pulled that off.
Yeah, I thought,
Yeah, and I love how they, unlike the book, they have to pull away that wall to reveal the door, which, you know, presumably to explain why the Telmarines wouldn't have found it when they invaded Narnia. And I thought it just added to that whole creepiness of this room that's been untouched for centuries.
yeah.
Yes.
And I actually really loved the whole idea of them, there being statues of them down in the treasure chamber, because that kind of added to at least what Adamson, I think, was
Turn,
trying to.
yeah, coming back.
Yeah, and also, like, Peter looking at the statue of himself that doesn't look
Yeah.
like him at all.
Yeah. And I like Lucy's, or Lucy has that dress and she says, "I was so tall." And Susan says, "Well, you were older then."
Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with the treasure chamber scene. Like, I like when Peter's walking up to a statue and everything. And when he pulls out, now right when he pulls out his sword, I was kind of expecting this big moment, just like it is in the book. And it after they built up to it in the movie, I felt like they kind of let me down a little there, because he just kind of pulls it out, and that's. Then I guess I was expecting, like even as I was watching the scene, I was expecting that to be a big moment, and it wasn't quite as big as I wanted. But I think it captured what it needed to capture from the book, which is we're back, we're finally back. This really is Caer Paravel.
And also, I liked
This is
that
home.
he, I liked that he read what was on the sword, because, like, in the first one, we did hear that what was on it, but, you know, we didn't know what, because, I mean, like, most people aren't gonna, like, study up that, and so it was cool that he kind of, like, was to say that in the second one. So I liked that because it was
Yeah,
straight from the book.
since they
Well,
didn't
also,
have that in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie, at
yeah,
least it's
right,
there.
exactly. Yeah, I'm glad they put that in there. And
Yes.
well, let's discuss one
That
more scene.
of course that leads into Lucy saying, you know, Tumnus the Beaver's they're gone, which is not in the book at all. They never acknowledge that in the book.
That's true. And I think they did capture both the joy of returning to Narnia and the sadness that they might have
The old days
birth
are gone,
loss.
yeah.
Well, I think, let's discuss one more scene, and then we'll wrap it up for this episode. And for the subsequent episodes, I'm going to have to try to go faster or never. We'll finish the analysis by the time Dawn Treader comes out. Or at least the teaser. But anyway, I think the next scene we have is back at, isn't it back at Mirza's castle?
Transitions to Mira is when the Telmarines and Glizal, they're returning with Trumpkin.
That's right. Yes. And this, you know, once again, it seems like it's almost like two different worlds. You have, even in ruins, Caer Paravel is still Narnia, and then you have the
Very
Telmarine
green.
Castle. Yes, the Telmarine Castle is completely different.
Metallic and very like stone and everything, you know.
Yeah, and then you really see the difference, because they end with a wide shot of the island that Caer Paravel is on, and then it cuts to a wide shot of the castle, so you really see the difference there.
Yeah, and I thought May I just say that to this, we'll see the third time, but second time I was watching it, I think the my favorite set, believe it or not, might just be my favorite indoor set was probably the Miraz's throne room for some reason.
Really,
I don't know
really
why.
like that, yeah.
I
I
just
did too.
love the looks in there. I thought this is just so. It just seems like a r real Telmarine room.
I agree. That was one of my favorite sets as well. And I liked how some of the thrones were empty, of course. I don't know if it was seven of them that were empty. I'll have to check for that at some point. Probably have to freeze frame it on the DVD.
Well,
But
some were killed too in the book.
yeah, it's true.
But I'm glad that they at least set up a position from where people can say, "What? What does he mean? Seven lords were banished? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I remember there
Yeah,
being various lords and
it
things like
is
that."
funny. Like they didn't set up Don Treader like the book does, and you would think this might be a good scene to do that in, but they didn't really. You'd think they would have mentioned, seven lords have been sent away, and but surprisingly they didn't. They didn't set it up. Didn't set up Don Treader at all there.
Well, but that might confuse like the main audience because they'd be like, who are these, seven lords? I mean, we've never even heard about them, and like you're not gonna see them in this film. So I think it was probably best to just kind of keep it sort of on the sort of like not on the surface so that fans could know, but the actual main audience wouldn't be like they wouldn't be distracted by something that they wouldn't really pick up on.
I did like that they showed in this scene that not all the Telmarines are of one mind with Miraz. It's not like everyone is a
Yeah,
Glazell or a
political
Sipestri.
intrigue.
Yeah, I agree. And of course, that's really important because at the end, Miraz ends up being double-crossed. And so it is important to set that up as early as possible.
Yeah. Well, how do you think they handled the whole issue? I mean, let's talk briefly here about the myth and extinct Narnians, and did it seem confusing at all, or was it just it different from the book? What do you
Yeah.
guys think?
I mean, at first, like when Glazell reveals Trumpkin and Miraz says, "Oh, impossible," and then later when Miraz says, "Caspian was abducted by Narnians," and that thing, and I was thinking, and then one of the lords says, "Oh, you're going to blame this on fairy tales? Are you crazy?" And I thought, "Oh, this is great. This is just like how it is in the book, and it's cool to see the Telmarine shock that all Narnia is still around." And then they bring Trumpkin in, and Miraz says, "Much of our ancestors' blood was spilled to eliminate this vermin," and it then I was like, "Well, wait a second. I thought they were fairy tales." And so I didn't like it's kind of inconsistent. You could interpret it either way, but it's such an important idea. And it's the myth becoming fact, not the extinct becoming suddenly unextinct. And so that's I think that was a critically important distinction, and they should have made it clearer than they did.
Yeah, well, I think to I guess you could argue that I guess I'm playing Adamson's ag advocate here. You could argue that Miraz is just thinking, well, apparently they were
Right.
into a spill,
See, that's what I was saying.
something
Yeah,
has been
that's
the
what I was
conquered something. Sort of like Caspian in the book. Miraz is kind of like, well, because Caspian's like, well, it is the conqueror. What did he conquer? And
Right. That's what I was kind of saying. Like, you can look through a lot of these hints, and you could find a way to come to that conclusion, but in the end, it should have been made very clear, because that's an important distinction.
And keep in
Yeah.
mind for Caspian, it is still a question of not just myth or whatever. It's also extinct and coming alive. Because remember, he asks Dr. Cornelius, "Are any of them still alive?" And Dr. Cornelius says, "Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I think there can't be."
Well,
So.
that is a conversation that's happening with. I mean, they had that in the deleted scenes. They had it when
Oh, really?
when Caspian says, like the Narnians, maybe they still exist, and that is something that's a conversation that's happening behind closed doors, where he's saying, where basically Cornelius is just saying they definitely used to exist, and but the general Telmarine people. The accepted belief should be that they never existed, and especially with Miraz's public position. Should now deep down, I think the book definitely implies that Miraz, deep down, he does believe that they at least once existed, and it just wasn't really made very clear in the movie what the tone was.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I didn't even really think of that whole, inconsistency. I was just, yeah, it seemed like it does seem like that though, once that I kind of think of it, it isn't all that, clear. So, but yeah, on I don't really think like the general public is really going to grasp that until maybe like many more times of actually seeing it and studying. But yeah, it is definitely sort of a problem.
I
It's
actually,
a
I'm sorry.
thematic issue. Like, it's not like it's something that it's important that, like, because through casting, we get to see Lewis's excitement of, the old stories are true. That was a big part of his conversion to Christianity, that and his excitement over finding out that all these stories that I thought were myth, oh, it's actually real. And it's not just something that we thought died out and now it's here. That's a big theme of the whole series, is the joy of finding out that this is all real. It's not just a story. And so that's
Right.
a critically important distinction.
Well, one thing I loved about the book that, we didn't get this at all in the movie because maybe they thought people would just think it was too ridiculous. But I think it illustrated a point in the book when Miraz is telling Casimir, there's no such thing as talking animals, there's no such thing as fawns or centaurs, and there's no such thing as lions. And I was
Yeah,
just, when I was
yeah.
looking at it, I was going, what? He
Because
doesn't believe in
at
lions?
first, you're like, oh yeah, no fawns and everything, and you're kind of going with it, and then no lions, like, what? Then you can relate to that. Like, of course there's lions.
Yeah, because in this world, lions are just as real as fawns
Yeah.
or talking beavers. Can I just say I loved Dinklage's line? It was just I think I got a big, I know it got a big laugh in the theaters where I was in.
I do.
Whose line? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
And you wonder why we don't like you.
Oh,
That
okay.
line.
And I don't really understand why people like that line so much. And it seemed to me inappropriate that Chumpkin would even talk. It seemed to me like Miraz would probably hit him again. And I don't know. It didn't really seem. I don't really get why people like it so much.
Well, Trumpkin has like a lot of spirit or whatever, so there you go. I don't know.
Right.
It's called spunk where I come
Yeah.
from. A lot of.
Well, guys, this is fun. Congratulations, we got through three scenes in the movie.
Yeah. How many
Good.
minutes do you think we covered there? About
I'm
how
looking at the
far into the
timer. I'm
film?
seeing 42 minutes and 30 seconds.
No, I mean, like, how much time in the film did we
Oh,
actually
oh,
cover?
oh.
Maybe like 15 or 20, maybe.
No way.
A little bit more, I would think.
Really? Up to
You think
20
it'd be less
minutes?
than that? I don't know. Yeah,
I
you're
would
probably a little bit
second
less. I don't
20.
know.
Probably
I did it.
maybe
I
it's
did at some
15.
point. I did look at my watch, and I was thinking, "Wow, that's." I thought more time had passed, so I
It's a
didn't have.
very fast-paced movie. I mean, I can't. I was trying to
Yeah.
think a little a while ago of, I was like, oh, I wish they'd added in this and then added in this. And then I'm trying to think, well, what would they have cut out? And I'm thinking, huh,
Right.
it's actually not as easy as the first one might have been.
Right.
Like you said, go, you could cut out the entire Melting River scene, but it's a little
Right,
harder in this one.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. Well,
Yeah. Thanks for having
signing
me.
off.
We'll try to get you guys back for some of them and hopefully get a good cycle of people as it comes out in Australia and New Zealand and the UK. So
Definitely.
yeah, like you said, hopefully it'll be done sometime before Don Treader comes out, like you said.
hopefully,
It
I
should
got it.
be.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks again, guys.
All right, bye.
If you have any questions or comments, then you can go ahead and email us. My email is rillian@narniweb.com. Glummies is glumpuddle@narniweb.com. And Skillet Dudes is skillet4me07@yahoo.com. Of course, we're going to have LionCon coming up, so make sure you check out lioncon.org for registration and details there. And here are the big dates for our friends all across the world. June 4th, Prince Caspian in the Philippines. June 5th, Prince Caspian in Hong Kong. June 5th, Prince Caspian in Israel. June 5th, Prince Caspian in Australia. Woo! So we can get some of our other Naniwebbers on here for that. June 19th, Prince Caspian in New Zealand. And June 27th, Prince Caspian in the UK. Well, it is spreading, slowly but surely. Thank you very much for joining us, and until next time, I'm your host, Rillian.